Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone.
WBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Shu Bartholomew. And joining me on the Commons today, I have Bill Murray. I have the honor of meeting him for the first time today, although we have been corresponding by email for a while, and we've also spoken on the phone. Bill, thank you so much for joining us today.
I appreciate the opportunity to meet your Shu and to appear on your show.
Bill, you're involved, embroiled in a lawsuit that seems to have sprouted legs and has grown a little beyond just a plain old lawsuit here, hey?
I am. I am one of the plaintiffs in a lawsuit commonly referred to as the Bemis case. It's named after a woman, Mildred Bemis, who lives in Oakton. It's a case filed against Lake Holiday Country Club.
You are a plaintiff in the Lake Holiday case. It is known, and you're one of many plaintiffs.
There are 32 plaintiffs in the case.
32 plaintiffs in
yes.
the case, okay. Tell us a little bit about it. I mean, before we got started, you said Lake Holiday's a mess, and I said, no, not an association, a mess. But yours is really a mess. Tell us about it.
It is, unfortunately, we don't have time to cover all of the mess, so we'll, for today, limit the discussion to the issues in the Bemis case. One of the reasons why I'm here is to address a lot of the misinformation about the Bemis case. What's at stake in the Bemis case are issues that are important to property owners and associations across the state and across the country. The plaintiffs in the Bemis case have taken the position that I think is backed by hundreds of years of property law, that the rights and obligations to their property are found and can only be found in a properly recorded deed that's in the chain of title to their individual property. Lake Holiday has, for some years, assessed fees and dues in excess of what is authorized in owner's deeds. They've been told this by their attorneys. Nevertheless, they've continued to make those assessments. They've tacked on legal fees. They've tacked on late fees. And when owners didn't pay, they have foreclosed on people. In August of 2007, I and a collection of others, approximately 32, filed the Bemis case in Frederick County. And what the Bemis plaintiffs are after was for a court to simply review the deeds of the property owners and to apply well-settled Virginia law that the obligations of those owners was to be found in the deeds to their properties.
You sent me the case, and by the way, the case is up on my website, so if you want to go and read it, you can on thecommons.com. And also, you have a blog. You want to give us the blog?
Sure. We run a website at lakeholidaynews.com.
Okay.
There's another website, thesummitadvisor.com, that is run by a Lake Holiday homeowner that also provides a forum for discussion about Lake Holiday.
Okay, so check those out. In fact, the Lake Holiday News is also linked on my website in the link, so you can just go there and click on it if you want to get there very quickly. One thing I noticed while I was reading, Bill, is that you have about 19 different sections in Lake Holiday, and there are about 17 different deeds recorded that govern these things. I mean, that must make for one heck of a mess.
It does. One of the things that makes Lake Holiday unique is that there is no master or overarching deed of dedication or declaration that applies to the entire community. Lake Holiday was started in the early 1970s, and deeds were recorded over a period of more than 25 years, in some cases by different parties. And the deeds applied to different sections. Two of the deeds apply to two sections at Lake Holiday. And the deeds contain different restrictions, different obligations to pay dues. the deeds are entirely different documents.
And so if you're on the board, you're going to have to make sure you know what's in each of the deeds before you go shooting everybody, right?
Unfortunately, that's not the approach that Lake Holiday has taken.
But that's what they should be doing.
That's the position of the Bemis plaintiffs, exactly, that is what they should be doing. What the board does has been to apply across all 19 sections one set of dues, one set of architectural restrictions, despite the fact that there are different restrictions, different covenants.
And they've also been charging assessments where they weren't allowed to charge. They didn't have the authority to charge those assessments.
Exactly.
And you told me earlier that their attorneys have also told them that they shouldn't be doing that, that they don't have the authority to do that.
Exactly. One of the items that came up in the Bemis case was an email exchange between Steve Moriarty, an attorney with Chadwick Washington, and then LHCC President Frank Heise. And in that email exchange, Moriarty observed to Heise that there is absolutely no collection authority in the deed of dedication for Section 3A, which is one of the sections at Lake Holiday. That's an email exchange that's in the trial record in the Bemis case.
Is that the section that all 32 plaintiffs live in?
No, the 32 plaintiffs own property in 8 different sections that are covered by 6 different deeds of dedication at Lake Holiday.
And none of those authorize the board to collect assessments?
No.
Or do they?
Not none of them. The deeds fall into 2 categories. There are one set of deeds in which Lake Holiday Country Club is not even named because Lake Holiday Country Club was not formed until years after the deeds were filed.
Wow.
In those deeds, there is no assessment obligation memorialized in the deed, and there's no obligation for Lake Holiday Country Club to maintain the common area. In 3 other deeds applicable to Bemis sections, there is what I would characterize a limited collection authority, and the limited collection authority is set forth as to defray the cost of maintaining the common area. The position of the Bemis plaintiffs is that we are fully prepared to honor the terms of the respective deeds of our property.
That makes sense. What common area are we talking about?
The common area in many communities consists of the roads. Unfortunately, that brings up another twist at Lake Holiday, insofar as although Lake Holiday has charged to maintain the roads at Lake Holiday,
they haven't been doing it, huh?
They don't, in fact, own most of the roads.
Who owns
at
the
Lake
roads?
Holiday.
Interesting. This is a twist I didn't know about.
It appears from a search of the land records that the finance company that foreclosed on the original developer back in the mid-1970s foreclosed on the roads but never later transferred the roads to Lake Holiday Country Club.
So the financial company owns the roads?
It appears that as of this date they continue to own the roads despite the fact that Lake Holiday has been collecting to maintain them.
Bill, that's a mess.
As I said, it is a mess.
It's a huge mess. Not just a little mess, it's a huge mess. Well, we have, in my association, we have kind of a similar situation with a sewer issue. And the attorney for the association at the time told the board, and we've got a letter with his, you know, with the wording, you know, go ahead and do it, but you're on less than concrete legal foundation. And because homeowners do not avail themselves of their rights, should you be challenged, you can make a decision based on the economics of the litigation. Those were his exact words. And so basically the attorneys are giving legal advice that, you know, you're really not supposed to do it, but go ahead, don't get caught.
And unfortunately, Shu, one of the problems in community associations is the associations are able to use other people's money to defend lawsuits and to make decisions that for a business would be uneconomic. And they're only able to do that by virtue of spending other people's money.
It's like a government. You just tax it.
Exactly.
You just raise taxes, particularly if you're big enough, and off you go. You're running. There was a law that, thank God, was defeated. But as I said to you in an email, Bill, it will be back. I do want to talk a little bit about Senate Bill 6016 and Senate Bill 1489, which for all intents and purposes are one and the same bill. I didn't know about 6016. It kind of flew under the radar because that was introduced in emergency session last June. You were much more involved with that. You want to tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. I think it's important for your listeners to understand the background of Senate Bill 6016. That's a bill that Senator Jill Vogel, the Republican senator from the 27th Senatorial District, introduced in the special session last June. This bill directly targets the Bemis case. Senator Vogel came to Lake Holiday to talk about her efforts to introduce this bill to rescue Lake Holiday. Unfortunately, our counsel, Wayne Travell, asked Senator Vogel for the opportunity to appear with her at the meeting at Lake Holiday, and he was not given that opportunity.
Oh, he wasn't allowed to attend?
He was not.
Oh, really? Who refused? Lake Holiday or Joe?
It was Lake Holiday that refused. Lake Holiday's position was that it was a meeting that was sponsored by two groups at Lake Holiday, and that Senator Vogel was appearing to address those groups. And unfortunately, Senator Vogel did not use the power of her position to encourage a more open exchange of ideas. I think had she done so, Wayne Travell would have been afforded the opportunity to address homeowners at Lake Holiday, and there would have been a chance to reduce some of the misunderstandings about the Bemis case. Nevertheless, Senator Vogel went ahead and introduced Senate Bill 6016.
Who wrote it, do you know?
I believe the initial drafts were written by Bob Diamond, an attorney for Miller & Smith, one of the parties in the Lake Holiday lawsuit, but ultimately the draft that was proposed to the Senate was authored by the Division of Legislative Services.
Okay. It goes through them, but it was initially written by Bob Diamond. For my listeners who don't know, Bob Diamond is, he wouldn't answer my emails. I tried to get him on here in November, but he's past president of Community Associations Institute, CAI, and he's been writing a whole lot of these declarations across the country, and they all sit there and say, we don't do things like this. It's the legislature that comes up with these ideas. I don't believe so. I don't think that Jill woke up in the middle of the night and said, oh, I think I'll get up in the morning and introduce a bill that would take away the rights of Bill Murray and all the other litigants or basically every homeowner in Virginia, really. It doesn't just apply to you.
Certainly the provisions of Senate Bill 6016, which fortunately failed to be enacted into law, would have applied to every owner in an association.
Let's talk about the provisions of the bill.
What we found particularly troubling with Senate Bill 6016 was the ability it would have granted to rewrite owners' deeds in unforeseen and undesirable ways. Our view is that that would have created a cloud of uncertainty around property in associations, and that uncertainty would have destroyed value. But let's make no mistake, Senate Bill 6016 was not put forward to address problems in Virginia at large. Senate Bill 6016 was put forward purely for addressing the Lake Holiday situation. The allegation that there are problems, widespread problems in associations across Virginia, is very misleading. Since the passage of the POA Act 20 years ago, there have only been three cases that have gone to the Virginia Supreme Court that have raised the issue of whether an association is subject to the POA Act, and two of those cases involve the same association. Interestingly, no case since the POA was enacted involves the core issue that's at stake in Lake Holiday, and that is whether later filed deeds can impose obligations on owners whose property is subject to older deeds. There's never been a Virginia Supreme Court case that raises that issue. So the issues at Lake Holiday are unique, and Senator Vogel's Bill 6016 was put forward specifically to target the Lake Holiday case. We could talk more in detail about how the specific language in the bill was targeted to the Lake Holiday case. But the notion behind the bill is to create an authority to rewrite owners' deeds, because if you go back to our earlier discussion, Lake Holiday has made assessments on owners for things that are not found in their deeds. And the fix to what the Lake Holiday Board calls their problem is to rewrite owners' deeds, to impose obligations that aren't there now.
And this is after they've put it to a vote of the homeowners, and the homeowners have said, no, thank you, we're not interested in amending our governing documents. Go fly a kite or run a flag up a flagpole or something. And then they go to court and they say, hey, these homeowners don't know what they're doing. It's good for the association that we amend the governing documents. Judge, please do so. Here's what we want. Here's our wish list.
Exactly, Shu. In Lake Holiday's case, there have been three failed attempts to amend their governing documents.
Oh, there have been three failed attempts.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And if you look at the precise language of Senate Bill 6016.
I have a copy here. You want it?
The language refers not to three actual votes, but to
attempts.
Three actual good faith attempts.
Right.
And the reason for that is because one of those attempts was canceled in advance of a vote because the board realized that the measure was sure to fail. That's why the specific language in the bill does not require three actual votes, but only good faith attempts. This is language that was very carefully crafted to apply directly to the actual circumstances at Lake Holiday.
Wow, I didn't realize that. I looked at the three attempts, and I thought, after the homeowners say no thank you three times, then we're going to say you don't know what you're talking about, so we're going to go to a judge and get it passed. But they don't even have to, the homeowners don't even have to say no thank you.
Exactly. One of the things that's, I think your listeners should understand about voting for proposed deed change is that most owners understand that not voting at all is the same as a no vote. I think some in the industry attempt to explain away non-participation in a vote as apathy.
Right.
Whereas I think the reality is that owners understand that if they want to approve something, they can use the power that they hold with the ballot to approve it. They choose not to. Some choose to reflect that by actually casting a no vote. Some choose to reflect that by merely pitching the ballot away because they realize it has the same effect as a no vote. And that non-vote is not necessarily a measure of apathy.
It's funny because some in the industry have always said that if there's a no vote, it means yes, because they didn't bother to come in and vote no. Yeah, I know. You're looking at me and you're laughing, but yeah, that's what I've heard. So if you're listening to this and you're tempted to just make a ball out of the ballot and play basketball with it, don't go in and actually vote no, and don't do it.
Well, I would say that if you truly want the measures that are put before you to pass, be sure to vote yes. I don't think owners that choose to throw away a ballot that contains measures that are so ridiculous that those owners should be labeled as apathetic and not interested in their community. I think owners have a significant investment in a community, and I think those owners will back that investment on issues that are important to them. I think the industry attempts to malign those owners that face measures that they clearly don't want to approve.
You're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and we are talking to Bill Murray right here in the warm and not so cozy, the cozy but not so warm studios of WEBR in Fairfax, Virginia. Bill, what were the attempted amendments to your governing documents? What did the board want the homeowners to change?
Unfortunately, the best way I can describe the amendments is to compare the size of the documents. Many of the deeds at Lake Holiday are a scant 6 or 7 pages in length.
Mm-hmm.
The new proposed governing documents that failed were to impose a deed of over 70 pages.
So they were looking at making sweeping changes. Not just one or two different provisions.
Exactly. These were sweeping changes.
Giving the board all kinds of powers.
It expanded the powers of the board. It expanded the powers of Miller and Smith at Lake Holiday. Miller and Smith is one of the largest property owners at Lake Holiday. It would have granted Miller and Smith easements over owners' properties that didn't exist before. And I think owners quite reasonably rejected those proposed amendments.
Miller and Smith is a developer?
Miller and Smith is a developer.
Okay.
That owns approximately 700 lots at Lake Holiday.
How many lots? What did I read, 1,900?
Lake Holiday is a
2,700.
About 2,700 lots.
Right, okay.
There are about 800 homes and about 1,900 undeveloped lots.
And some of those lots are developable, and some of them are not because of the lack of water and sewer service?
Right. About 500 of the 1,900 lots have water and sewer availability, and the remaining lots are undevelopable insofar as they lack water and sewer. It's not an area where you could put in a private well and a private septic system, for example.
So you can't do anything with those lots?
Right.
Who owns those lots?
Those lots, in many instances, are owned by owners that date back to the original purchase. Many of those owners are elderly. Mildred Bemis, for example, the named plaintiff, is one of the original purchasers at Lake Holiday in the early 1970s.
Does she have a house or is it just a lot?
She owns an undevelopable lot.
Oh, an undevelopable lot. Well, okay. I guess she can't really sell it. It's not probably not worth a whole lot.
One of the challenges for people like Mildred Bemis is that Lake Holiday has imposed a $2,000 transfer fee that's not found in Mildred Bemis' deed or many of the other deeds at Lake Holiday. That is virtual confiscation for someone like Mildred Bemis because it takes away her right to sell that lot.
It reduces her, it reduces the value of her property.
Significantly.
By quite a bit. And we thought that associations protected property values. We're told that's what they're there for. But they're not doing that, are they, Bill?
I think when associations follow their governing documents, they may add value. I think when they stray and impose fees and dues that are outside their governing documents, when they impose rules and regulations that are outside their governing documents, I think they can be an impediment to owners enjoying their property. At Lake Holiday, for example, Lake Holiday operates a roving patrol that functions like a private police force with radar guns and citation books and ticket books, and they ticket owners much the same way a county police officer would ticket a traffic violator.
And of course, since they're private cops, the Constitution doesn't apply on private property.
It's not clear that in Virginia that what they are engaging in is a permissible act. But nevertheless, they do it anyway.
Have they ever got legal opinions on what they're doing? Do you know?
If they have gotten legal opinions on that subject, they haven't shared them with me.
Because that's something that's being done across the country, and there's all kinds of problems that come out of it. You get these private cops, you know, these rent-a-cops that put on these cute little uniforms and run around writing tickets and basically run up, you know, make money for the association or for themselves somehow. Mm. It comes down to money always, doesn't it?
It's a revenue source.
It is a revenue source. The same way with the Fairfax County Police. They're hiding in the bushes with their radar guns all the time. And they're too busy to go out and do anything, any real cop work.
I'd like to come back, if we could, to Senate Bill 6016.
Hmm?
I've gone on a tangent and we've moved away from that. I think there are some important issues about Senate Bill 6016 because that led into subsequent efforts by Senator Vogel to change the property rights of Virginians. Fortunately, those efforts have failed as well. Senator Vogel has repeatedly misstated the position of the Bemis plaintiffs relative to her efforts to amend the POA Act. For example, her website, and she's given interviews with the Winchester Star, a local paper in Frederick County, where she has said that the Bemis plaintiffs are super excited. Those are her words.
Super excited.
Super excited about her efforts to meddle in their court case. She has said...
Are you super excited, Bill? You're one of the plaintiffs.
Absolutely not. I'm super angry.
You're super excited in a different way.
She has also said that the Bemis plaintiffs are overall good with her efforts to meddle in their lawsuit. And again, those are her words. In fact, the attorney for the Bemis plaintiffs, Wayne Travell, met with Senator Vogel in her office and unambiguously communicated that the Bemis plaintiffs strongly opposed any effort on Senator Vogel's part to intervene in their case. Nevertheless, she put the legislation forward, not once, but now two times. And fortunately, as you know, Shu, just this past Wednesday, Senator Vogel's second attempt was withdrawn by the senator before it emerged from the Senate General Laws and Technology Committee.
Well, she'd introduced it twice, and it's funny, Bill, because I tried to get a copy early on, and she wouldn't give it to me. It was introduced right before it went to the committee. And at the committee level, she then asked them to hold off until she got a chance to tweak it a little bit. And when I didn't find anything, Tuesday night I emailed her and I said, hey, Jill, you know, have you got a copy of it? Can you shoot me an email? She wrote back and she said, I've withdrawn it. I've struck the bill. So, but that was really late. I don't know what happened. I don't know why she had this change of heart.
I don't know either. Unfortunately, I think the senator's proposal is by its very nature not a proposal that can be tweaked.
It can't. I told her that.
Senator Vogel's proposal is a proposal that I believe is unconstitutional. It is an attempt to retroactively change a vested right. Unfortunately, she has now gone ahead and done this, or attempted to do this twice. I would have welcomed an opportunity to have an open dialogue with the senator today about these issues. I'm sure you've welcomed others to come and appear on your show to discuss these issues.
Yeah.
To date, Senator Vogel has shied away from open dialogue about these issues other than using her platform to sell others on the notion that this is not an attempt to meddle in the Bemis case.
Bill, 6016 had three patrons, Vogel, Dick Zaslaw, and a third one, I can't remember who.
Beverly Sherwood was the patron.
Beverly Sherwood, okay. Why did they drop off? Any idea? Because they were not on 1489, which was, except for five words, was identical.
They were not. 1489 was the bill that was introduced in the 2009 legislative session.
Right.
And Vogel was the sole patron for that bill.
Right. Any idea why the others didn't support it?
I'd like to believe that the others have come to the conclusion that it's a bad bill. I'd like to believe that Senator Vogel withdrew the bill because she's come to her senses and that she's concluded that it is a mistake to meddle in active litigation and it is a mistake to attempt to retroactively change the property rights of tens of thousands of Virginians simply to solve what is a legal problem at Lake Holiday.
I have it on good authority that the industry attorneys are looking at trucking this bill across the country. So, you know, for all my listeners who are not in Virginia, don't sit there and be too smug about it, because it may have started with Lake Holiday, and you may have given someone the idea. I mean, I can't imagine Jill coming up with it, but maybe she did. I mean, she is an attorney. Maybe it was her idea. Gee whiz, we'll just write something up here and we'll take care of this pesky little lawsuit. But once the idea had a chance to get a hold, I think that they're going to be bringing it across the country.
I think there will be a wider effort, and I think that's why your listeners need to be ever vigilant to these issues. The issues at Lake Holiday and the issues to amend owners' property rights apply to every property owner, not just in Virginia. This is a dangerous, dangerous threat, and it needs to be stopped. And if it's not stopped before it picks up momentum, these bills may well be passed and enacted into law, and once they are, it'll be much harder to undo them. In fact, if you look at Senate Bill 6016, that bill was passed by the Virginia Senate, and it was only killed in the Virginia Housing Commission.
Right. And so, and the only reason it was killed there was because they didn't think it was an emergency. They thought it was a good idea.
I think if you look at the comments, you're right. The committee members felt there was a need to amend the POA Act, but I think they recognized that this proposed legislation, 6016, was an attempt to interfere in a court case. I do think they recognized that the legislation was arguably unconstitutional, and Senator Vogel's bill at the time contained an emergency clause, much like Senate Bill 1489, and I think the combination of those factors caused the committee members to pause. And in the shortened special session, that killed the bill.
We're talking to Bill Murray. He's one of 32 plaintiffs in the Lake Holiday case. Bill, your lawsuit has now gone to the Supreme Court. You lost it at the circuit court level, and the judge said it was common sense to. I mean, I can't believe a judge would say something stupid like that. It's common sense to bring everybody under the same governing documents.
That's exactly the words that Judge Prosser used. I think it's important to look at some of the background.
Go ahead, please.
In the Bemis case, we filed the Bemis case in August of 2007. And when we filed the Bemis case, it was our expectation that the court would simply look at the deeds for the Bemis sections. That's what the plaintiffs asked the court to do.
Mm-hmm.
It was our view that this was a paper case. At that point, there were three on-point Supreme Court decisions. Those three Supreme Court decisions, which are Anderson in 1997, Winkleman in 2004, and Shiflett in January of 2008, set forth two requirements for Virginia's POA Act to apply to a community. Those two requirements are that the deed to an owner's property has an obligation for the owner to pay dues to an entity, and likewise that entity has an obligation to maintain the common area.
Mm-hmm.
Those obligations have to be clearly stated in a recorded deed. That's what we asked the circuit court to do when we filed the case in August of 2007. In January of 2008, after the Shiflett decision came out, Judge Prosser, taking into account the Shiflett decision, acknowledged that the Supreme Court just told him clearly what's a ball and what's a strike. And he encouraged Lake Holiday to settle the case. Instead of attempting to settle the case, shortly thereafter, Miller and Smith, the large real estate developer with about 700 lots at Lake Holiday, joined the case. Over plaintiff's objection, Judge Prosser allowed Frederick County itself to intervene in the case on behalf of Lake Holiday.
Can you explain that? I mean, why would a county intervene?
The judge's ruling, I think, defies explanation.
That makes no sense.
After those events, Miller and Smith filed a motion to make every owner in the 2,700-lot community a necessary party, without which a decision couldn't be reached. The judge, over plaintiff's objection, went along with that motion and ordered the joinder of more than 1,500 other parties. In June, after all these parties had joined the case, the judge observed that lawyers were multiplying in the case faster than a nuclear disaster. the case bogged down, and you had lawyers arguing the same motion over and over. And ultimately, in August of 2008, the judge dismissed the case on a demurrer and a plea in bar. And the judge, in his explanation, said that he was doing it by common sense, and that he reached the conclusion that all of the different sections at Lake Holiday were somehow, in his words, roped under the POAA, his reference to the Virginia POA Act, and that having reached that decision, applying the well-established standards in the three Supreme Court cases was, again, in his words, sort of moot. And therefore, he never undertook the analysis of the property deeds to see whether those deeds passed the tests outlined in Anderson, Winkleman, and Shifflin.
Whoa. So you appealed that.
So that's been appealed to the Virginia Supreme Court.
Have you heard whether they're going to hear it?
No, we won't. The next step is for the other side, if they choose, to file their reply briefs. And then our attorneys will make an oral argument before a panel of Supreme Court justices. Virginia operates much like the United States at large, where the court will decide whether to hear a case or not.
Right.
Process known as granting cert.
Right.
And we will have an opportunity to appear before a panel sometime in April or early May. And I would expect that if we are granted cert, that a decision in the Bemis case by the Supreme Court could be reached as early as late November.
So you've still got quite a haul ahead of you.
Yes.
Almost a year. And you said you started this in 2007?
Yes.
The case? That's a long haul.
I think one could conservatively estimate that all the parties involved, Lake Holiday, Miller and Smith, the Bemis plaintiffs, there's probably been an expenditure in excess of $750,000 collectively on lawyers fighting this issue.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me at all.
There is a lot at stake at Lake Holiday. Lake Holiday, because of the number of lots, the dollars are big. There are approximately $250 million worth of real estate at Lake Holiday today. And if you look at the development potential, because 1,900 of the lots are undeveloped, the future development at Lake Holiday will be anywhere from $600 to $800 million or more. So Lake Holiday is a billion-dollar-plus community when it's all built out.
Do you think it will ever get built out? I mean, it's been sitting there for, what, almost 40 years? If it started in the early 70s?
I think ultimately, with the population growth of Northern Virginia and Frederick County, I think ultimately Lake Holiday will be built out. I think that Lake Holiday developed in fits and starts, and that if the legal issues surrounding the Bemis case are resolved, and Lake Holiday is on a firmer footing, and that footing is one that is consistent with property rights for association owners. Lake Holiday is an attractive place. It's, as I said earlier, it's one of the largest boatable lakes within driving distance to Washington, D.C. So I think the opportunity for Lake Holiday to continue to grow is there. Given the high dues structure and given the conduct of its board, I think that growth has been severely limited.
And that has obviously affected morale. Do people live there year-round, or is it predominantly sort of a weekend getaway?
There are owners that fit both categories.
Okay, so it's because it's a country club, I wondered if it was more recreational.
Other than the 240-acre man-made lake, there's limited recreational opportunities. There's walking trails, which are really the undeveloped roads. But there's limited recreational opportunities other than the lake. I mentioned earlier that in 2007, Lake Holiday took on a balloon note to refurbish their clubhouse for $1.2 million. Many in the community feel that the clubhouse is used for little more than board of directors meetings. Beyond the clubhouse and the lake, there's really limited amenities at Lake Holiday. Despite that fact, many of the homes at Lake Holiday, which are relatively modest, some sell for less than $200,000. Those owners face dues of close to $2,000 a year.
Wow.
That's expensive.
That is expensive. That's very expensive. Before we got started, you handed me a memo. You want to tell me a little bit about this? It talks about the Common Interest Community Work Group of Virginia Housing Commission in Richmond on June 26. Todd Sinkin and I redrafted the proposed changes to the law in order to, one, solve the problems raised by Lake Arrowhead and Dogwood, one in two cases, two, address the non-congruent definitions of common interest community and development in the POA Act created by Chapter 851 of the 2008 Acts of Assembly, formerly House Bill 516, gee whiz. Three, facilitate reformation of recorded covenants when the method set forth in the covenant itself is impractical. Although these changes may have an impact on the Lake Holiday project, we do not think that they can affect the outcome of the current litigation.
Rather self-serving comment.
And he's the attorney?
That's a memo from...
It's Bob Diamond?
Bob Diamond, the attorney for Miller & Smith, party in the Bemis case. I think it's important to put that memo in a timeline. We talked earlier about the fact that in late June of 2008, the Virginia Housing Commission sat and evaluated Senate Bill 6016. Bob Diamond, the attorney for Miller & Smith, and Todd Sinkins of Reese Broom, one of the attorneys for Lake Holiday, were at the meeting of the Virginia Housing Commission, and they spoke in favor of Senator Vogel's bill.
Right.
When Senator Vogel's SB 6016 was rejected, obviously, Sinkins and Diamond immediately went to work to draft legislation for the 2009 legislative session. And that memo reflects their efforts. And what's important about that memo is that there is a continued effort to retroactively change property owners' rights by creating an ability to change people's deeds in unforeseen and potentially undesirable ways without their consent.
That is really and truly scary, Bill.
It is scary. I think it involves principles that we would say are fundamentally un-American. Your property deed is the deal. And an effort to retroactively change the deal is giving one party the ability to change a contract. I think that violates fundamental American sensibilities of fair play. We don't allow unilateral changes anywhere else in our society.
Well, we have been told over and over and over again that, you know, you signed the contract, you agreed, you've got to take your lumps. That's what associations are all about, blah, blah, blah. And now all of a sudden the contract doesn't seem to be quite so important, does it?
No, it doesn't. And I think there is a difference between signing the contract and taking your lumps and saying, you've signed a contract, you'll take your lumps, but oh, by the way, if we ever find it impractical, to use Diamond's word, that your rights should be changed, we'll just go ahead and change them anyway. Many deeds contain amendment provisions.
Yeah.
And we talked about the apathy on the part of some owners who may not choose to participate in those votes. But this is attempting to change the rights of owners in ways that are outside the amendment provisions and over the objection of owners. Because Diamond's proposal, like the two proposals that Jill Vogel has put forward, involve rewriting owners' deeds after those deeds have failed to win approval in three good faith attempts by the board.
And that's just unbelievable. You know, some of the earlier, and I don't know with all the different deeds that you have down in Lake Holiday, but some of the earlier deeds, the developer or the attorneys who actually did the writing didn't want to make it particularly easy for the owners to make any amendments because they felt that this was, you know, they had written it. There's a certain ego involved. So there was a requirement for an affirmative vote of a supermajority. For instance, I live in an association that was also developed in the 70s, and the requirement was a 95% affirmative vote for the first 20 years, and then it dropped down to, or 20, 25 years, and then it dropped down to 75%. So there's, you know, a little bit easier. Then, over years, the industry has got all this enabling legislation passed, which has expanded and augmented the powers of associations and the management and the industry, basically. And they found it difficult to make those amendments because the homeowners didn't want to give up their rights. And so they started rewriting, or, you know, when they wrote the bills or when they wrote the new deeds, they started lowering it. It's a majority of something or a simple majority affirmative votes. If you have 100 lots, then 51 or 56 or, what, you know, whatever it is, but they've lowered it so much so that it's easier for them to amend the governing documents. And when it still doesn't happen, they go and get something like this tried to pass.
Well, they'd like to get something like this to pass. Virginia law is that if your deed is silent as to amendment and your community is not subject to the POA Act, and again, to determine whether your community is subject to the POA Act, we have to come back to the tests that the Supreme Court in Anderson, Winkleman, and Shiflett has set forth. The amendment provision is what's found in your deed. If your deed is silent, your deed cannot be changed without your consent.
So it would require 100%.
It would require 100%.
I like that.
Many of the Lake Holiday deeds are silent as to amendment.
Okay, I was going to ask you about that. So they would require 100%.
If Lake Holiday is, as we argue in the Bemis case, not subject to. Lake Holiday has argued that they are subject to the POA Act and can operate on the lower standard of a supermajority. In fact, in one of the votes that Lake Holiday held, instead of voting section by section, Lake Holiday held an at-large vote to change its deeds of dedication and used the lower standard of two-thirds, not the 100%. Even on the lower standard, by a wide margin, those declarations failed to pass.
Bill, good luck. I hope you'll come back when this is all over with and tell us how you made out, because we will be following this case. And we will be following any more attempts by any legislator across the country to pass something horrible like this bill.
Well, Shu, I appreciate your efforts to fight these bad bills, and I would continue to encourage you to have people like Senator Vogel engage in an open dialogue about these bad bills. I think that's the best way to stop them. Unfortunately, as I'm sure you've found out, many of the people, Senator Vogel, Bob Diamond, people from the CAI, they're reluctant to discuss these issues in a more public forum.
Bob Diamond's been on a number of times. I know Bob Diamond, and this time he wouldn't answer. Pia Trigiani came on, and she had tried to get a hold of Bob as well, but thank you for the memo here. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.